And good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us this morning. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. Jason Croft is at the controls for this hour. On any given night, something like 750,000 men, women, children are homeless in the United States. At least those are the figures that we have. In the state of Illinois, it's estimated that more than 14,000 people experience homelessness every night. This morning, in this hour focus, we want to try to talk a little bit about homelessness here in our part of the state in East Central Illinois, talk about what some local people and agencies are doing to address the problem. And we're here this morning on WILL AM, and also we're webcasting this particular program. So if you'd like to go to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu, you can watch the program as we do it. Either way, glad to have you with us. And we're also happy to have two guests here with us in the studio. Beverly Baker, she's Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County, and also Reverend Irvin Williams. He is Executive Director and Pastor of Restoration Urban Ministries, located in Champaign. And as we talk, questions, comments are certainly welcome. We hope that people will just be brief if they can. We just ask that so we can get in as many callers as possible. But anybody's welcome to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We also have email, so you can send in a comment that way, will-talk@illinois.edu. And thank you both very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
I know that periodically here in our area, just in Champaign-Urbana, there have been attempts to count, to try to determine how many people are chronically homeless, or how many people at that point in time, how many people are homeless. I'm almost a little hesitant to start talking about numbers right off, but that's kind of the natural thing to talk about numbers. So what do we know about homelessness, say, in Champaign-Urbana or in Champaign County?
It is here. And I think that's something that, you know, the average resident probably doesn't know because they don't see it. But it is here. The annual count that takes place, the last count, the last numbers we have, there are over 500 homeless individuals, and over between 100 and 200 of them were children. So that's startling. And we know through our regional office of education, which administers a grant through the Illinois State Board of Education to address and try and support homeless school children, that we've been averaging the last few years right around 300 homeless school children each year. So, and right. Those are unduplicated. Those are individuals. So,
yeah. Do you, I wonder, Reverend Williams, if you think that that people don't understand the extent of the problem, and particularly the fact that there are a lot of families that are homeless. It's not people maybe have this idea, well, it's single men. What's your experience, Ben?
Well, I think we see pretty much both. We see single men, we see single women. We also see a lot of families. Hmm. I think just a few days ago, they had a young lady who was still yet sleeping in a car, and some people had brought her over to Restoration to see if there's a possibility we could get her in our program. Sometimes I think when we think of homelessness, we think about the ones walking down the street with the bags and the ones pushing the grocery carts, and those are the ones we can relate to because mm-hmm. that's what the media usually show. But there's many, many, many more that they're hidden. You don't see them. They're out during the day trying to either eat and take care of them, meet their needs, and then usually in the evenings they're going to wherever they can find to sleep.
Yeah. And I suppose that also gets us to the idea that there are people that are maybe sometimes called maybe not literally homeless, but they're precariously housed. Maybe that's the terminology, which means that, well, maybe they have someplace they can stay. So maybe they have friends. Maybe they have family that they're staying with. But it's not a good long-term solution for any of those people. Right. And it's something that could work for a while. But yes, there could be an abrupt change at any minute.
Mm-hmm. We call that couch surfing. That's a terminology that gets used a lot. Just, you know, we're okay. We're going to stay with friends, you know, for a couple nights here. We're going to stay with a family member here. Or, you know, my sister says we can stay with her. You go, you make those plans, you get settled in, and then something changes. They're, you know, know, arguments or disagreements that take place, or it just is too uncomfortable. There are misunderstandings and miscommunications, and before you know it, the situation changes, and that's no longer an option for your family to stay there. And you're back to trying to piece together something else. So it's just that it's very piecemeal in terms of trying to patch something together wherever you can.
Yeah.
It was a few years ago that a term was two that I can recall since we've been doing this. One was the term near homeless. Mm-hmm. And so those were those individuals who were able to find the couch, are able to, and in some cases, abandoned buildings, and sometimes may not be counted. Another term that we recall was the term motel people. It was when we were working our youth program that we would stop at motels, and I heard the kids one day saying, oh, we're going to get the motel kids. And it's amazing how many, literally hundreds of families and people that are basically living in motels, and they try to do whatever they can to raise whatever they can to stay, and they'll stay there as long as they can. And, of course, that can change, too. I remember in the past that a lot of them, when food stamps were available, they literally sold their food stamps so that they could be able to afford to pay for a few more nights living in a motel.
Yeah, and I'm sure that that's a pretty expensive way to try to house yourself.
Sure it is.
Living like that.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Tell me a little bit about Restoration Urban Ministries and what it is that you do there.
Well, I'd say probably a little bit of everything that has to do with the poor. Our two major projects, of course, one of them is our transitional program, and then the other one, of course, is our food program distribution. Both of them are very expensive programs. We work with lots of people. I think we feed somewhere close to 2,500, 3,000 a month with our food program, and then any given time we may average out better than 125 people living in our facility. Those are our two major ones. One of the things that we concentrate pretty much in our transitional program was that we were concerned that we were seeing the same people over and over and over, year after year, basically sleeping on a cot and never doing anything beyond that. And our concerns were, particularly when we started a housing program, was to begin to see if we could change those numbers there, that we could give people the kind of tools that they needed so that eventually we could scratch them off of the rolls when we start thinking in terms of homelessness or tax problems.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that raises this question. When you look at the number of people that at any given time that are homeless, how many of those people are for how many of those people is this a chronic issue and that may have been an issue for them for years, and how many because they've had some challenge, they lost their job, they have had unexpected bills come along for health problems. You know, it could be any number of things that it could have been that before they were making it maybe barely, but that they were making it, and then something came along and suddenly they found themselves homeless.
I think those numbers, it's a moving target, you know, to be able to say exactly this many are chronically homeless, this many are precariously housed. It's constantly a moving target. We're always going to have those in our community that for whatever challenge are homeless. And there are organizations that try and address that and try and wrap around them and address whatever substance abuse or mental health issue might be at the root of their issue and their inability to secure housing and maintain it for themselves. But, you know, I would say the largest majority that we're seeing are probably people who are on that brink. They could maybe sustain housing themselves, but they need help. They maybe, you know, have had multiple challenges presented in front of them. They just don't know how to conquer those challenges, how to set goals, how to work through some of the issues that they have, secure the resources that they need, and just have that support in place to keep them moving along in the right direction. And that's what programs like Restoration Urban Ministries have yep. tried to do, is to wrap around these individuals and families with the help they need to get pointed in the right direction and help them be successful.
Yeah. Let me say, too, one of the things that I felt like that we've seen in the last few years, I guess, is the working poor. Those are the individuals, they maintain a job, they do all the things that we expect them to do. But imagine for a moment you're making about $8.25 to $8.50 an hour. How many hours do you have to work in order to be able to afford an apartment if the average cost is on the other side of $500? How many hours do you have to work in order to cover utilities, in order to cover food? And because they are the working poor, many times they don't qualify for some of the governmental services that are out there. And they're trying to do exactly what we encourage them to do. Hold your job, keep working, but it's never enough. We get a lot of people at restoration. They're working these jobs, but it's not enough because they still can't afford the rent. And it also leads to things like bad credit and some of the other things. That's part of all of this, too.
Yeah. This is actually an issue that we did some talking about here on radio and television last month when we were trying to look at the problem of affordable housing. And in fact, we did a television program, and you were good enough to be on the show. And one of the things that we, I think, tried to point out to people was that it's pretty straightforward. If you take a look at what's happened with incomes and then what's happened with rent. The cost of rent has gone up a lot faster than the incomes have. So, you know, it's an issue was maybe people indeed are working. They do have money that they could spend on their housing. But to be able to find something that's decent, where you'd feel okay living with your family, so it's decent, it's safe, it's a good place for family to be able to find some place like that that you can afford has become increasingly difficult.
Yes. It's probably one of the major complaints that we get a lot of times. You know, what am I supposed to do? You know, there was a time when I didn't work. I've been able to hold my job. I've been able to do everything that's required of me, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to be able to answer that question. To try to subsidize if we can to be and the other is just to be there to encourage them. Don't give up because you are doing the right thing here. And yes, that's a major problem for us here in this community. Yeah.
Maybe I should reintroduce guests for this part of the show. For anybody who has just tuned in, talking with us this morning is the Reverend Irvin Williams. He's Executive Director of Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign. And also Beverly Baker. She's Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County. We're talking about homelessness in our part of the state. Questions are certainly welcome. Questions, comments. You can join the conversation by going to pick up the telephone, going to 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks. We have a toll-free line, so anywhere you're listening, if it would be a long-distance call, you can use that number, and that is 800-222-9455. We do also have email, so if you'd like to send your thoughts that way, will-talk@illinois.edu. And certainly, United Way, if I hope people know what United Way is all about, that it's an agency that provides funding to various organizations in the community that do a wide range of social service kind of work. Specifically, do you find that you've had more groups that deal with homelessness or with people that are just really struggling and they're kind of on the margins of being able to take care of themselves? Has there been more over time? Does there seem to be more need for more organizations coming and saying, look, we're trying to provide this service and we can't keep up because the demand just keeps going up?
Mm-hmm. We have quite a few organizations that apply to United Way for funding, and quite a few that do receive funding for the work that they do to work with the homeless, to support families and individuals onto to self-sufficiency. I can't say that we've had more requests in terms of the number of organizations that are coming to us for money. We have had a more requests are showing a greater amount of need from these organizations, that they're serving more and more individuals. They have waiting lists, or they're having to turn people down, or they just don't have the capacity to serve the calls for help that they're getting. So that we have indeed seen.
Yeah. And certainly we know that the requests for various kinds of emergency assistance, for example, last fall, we had some did some programs where we're talking with people who were operating food pantries, who were trying to provide that kind of assistance for people having a tough time feeding their families. And they talked about just how much the demand had gone up and how many people had come to them and said things like, you know, I don't know why I'm here. We've never had this kind of problem before. But some big shock maybe came. Somebody lost a job. Or again, it could be, you know, somebody got sick and we had this enormous bill. You know, who knows? There can be all sorts of things. But suddenly we have people who before were doing okay and now have to say, I can't take care of my family. Have you seen, is this a trend that you've seen over time?
Sure it is. Probably in the last few years, particularly with all the discussion regarding the recession, you think about what group of people is going to be most affected by that. That's going to be these individuals that's either have no income or a little bit of income. Cost of everything begins to go up. And so what can they do? And so we do see them. It gives them a chance when they come to restoration to forget for the moment that this big bill you got for utilities, this big bill for rent, and let's concentrate on what is it that I need to do so that I can once again get back out there again, be somewhat, quote unquote, I guess if the term still works, self-sufficient, and be able to provide for their families. And so probably, I would say at any given time, greater than 50% of the people that we serve are probably fit in that category.
I think when you look at data, I know in our 2011 community report that we released last year, there are some statistics in there when we look at jobs and the number of jobs that have been lost, not through the recent recession, but then also in the decade leading up to this, that, you know, the loss of higher paying jobs in manufacturing and different fields like that, education, those jobs have been decreasing. And the highest percentage of jobs that we have added have been the lower wage service industry type of positions, the retail, the restaurant, those types of jobs. And those are the ones that pay the lower wages. So people are out there working. They're trying to support their family, but the wages just aren't meeting the need, or they're trying to balance several part-time jobs together to connect it all together and have enough income to support their family. But those are the types of jobs, too, that are very fluid depending upon what the economy is doing at the time. You know, those jobs are easier to find during the holidays, but then at other times of the year, they're making cutbacks depending on what the economy is dictating for the type of service that they offer.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that you have should have a pretty good sense of the various kinds of agencies and groups that are trying to serve the people that we're talking about. How does the available help square up with the need, particularly when it comes to someone who has an emergency need for shelter?
Well, that's a need that's been identified here in the community. It's something we've been talking about. I can't say it's a brand new need. I mean, it's been in the conversation for the past several years, is that there really isn't an emergency shelter for families. We have some wonderful organizations that do exist in this community and that do a lot to support individuals. We have the Time Center and Stepping Stone, which are both options for single men. We have Center for Women in Transition, which is an option for single women or women with children. We have Restoration, which is an option for men, women, and families, but it's a transitional program. They have requirements that are a part of the work that they do, and it's not necessarily the right fit for everybody. We have Roundhouse, which is a youth shelter, but there are some gaps there. If you are a family unit, and you want to stay together, there's not an option for you. If the transitional program at Restoration is not the right fit for your family, there's not another option out there. If you're a woman and you have a teenage son, he can't come to Center for Women in Transition with you. There's an age cutoff. I believe it's age 14 for young men. So I'm a mother. I have a 16-year-old. If I had to find someplace, I couldn't imagine going someplace and not having my kids with me. There wouldn't be an option for him. So we want to keep that family unit together. When we talk to the educators in our schools, when you talk to counselors in the healthcare community, they'll tell you, keeping families strong and together, it builds resiliency in children. So you want to keep that family unit together. If they're functioning and they want to stay together, we want to try and help keep them together rather than splitting them up, because they're going to be more successful and the kids are going to be more secure and more able to face the challenges that family has if they're together.
I imagine some people might find that surprising, that we don't, perhaps again, beside from Restoration, we don't have a shelter, that kind of facility that can accommodate a family. Why is it that why in Champaign-Urbana, why is it that we don't have such a thing?
That's a good question. and one that we're investigating. We're looking into the issue. I think, like I said, we have a lot of great resources in this community, and I can't say enough about the wonderful services and people that offer those services here in this community. And, you know, you respond to what the needs are, and I think this need for families, as the economy has changed over the past decade, we're seeing more and more families in this situation. So I think that it is really coming to the forefront that this is an issue that needs to be addressed.
And we certainly would. I would not want to underestimate the kind of contribution that the Time Center or the Center for Women Transition makes. Certainly, you know, you wouldn't
Absolutely.
Want to go to them and say, "Well, what's wrong with you?"
No.
Because
nope.
we, you know, that, but clearly, the community has to look at the fact that here is a particular need that so far, I guess, really nobody has come up with a way to serve. I suppose I'm asking the same question over and again. Why? Maybe there are a particular challenge in having that kind of facility. That are the needs of families so much different than the needs of, say, single men or single women?
I think there are just, Reverend Williams and I were talking about this, waiting to go on the air, that families in this situation. It's not just that they don't have a home right now, that they don't have a regular, secure, stable place to live. They have multiple challenges, multiple concerns, layers and layers of problems that they're trying to address. So families come, you know, there's more people in a family than there is when you're talking about an individual. So the more people you have, the more concerns you have, or the more problems and challenges you have. So that is different than working with an individual. You know, when you put men, women, and children all together in one place, there are just safety and security issues that you have to take into consideration. There's having a facility. There's what types of programming and supports do these families need. And like I said, I really think just over the past decade, this has really come to the forefront as an issue that we're seeing more and more families. So there really is a need for some type of a program or a facility that can help address the needs of these families. Up to this point, it's been more single individuals or women with children, but we're seeing more and more families, and that's why it's time to step up and really address the problem and get something taken care of here in Champaign County.
Yeah. How are families different? I mean, how from your experience, how are their needs different than say if you have single adults?
Well, I think if you just think about it for a moment, if you're dealing with a single individual, you just got their problems and how they relate to other people. Mm-hmm. But once you put a family together, that whole dynamic changes real quickly, because not only are you dealing with each one of them individually, but corporately as a family, too. And with them, each one of them come with issues. I think quickly we'll think, well, OK, what's mom working through? What's dad working through? And we may not recognize that because of the conditions that they were living in, the child has some things to work through as well. What if they're a teenager? What if there's two or three teens within that family? And keeping them together, teens got a lot of issues, a lot of things going on. And think about it for a moment, too. If you're a teenager, you only got a few years of trying to figure out how the world operates, how to deal with it, how do you deal with some of the emotional things going on. And so there you are with this unique situation, and you really don't have the tools to be able to work with. And in fact, most of the adults don't. So, you know, you got that family there. So you've got all those things to deal with. You got the entire family. You got to teach, in some cases, teach them again how to be a family, teach them how to be a neighbor, make sure that the safety needs are being met. And generally, you're going to have to cover it. For us, we have to look at the whole package, because we're thinking in terms of transition. Where are you going to go? You can't continuously live with your children in a motel. The idea is for you to figure out, get a plan. Let's work through some things. Let's look at what's going on with you, so that now we can start thinking in terms of a vision that's going to take us beyond here, back out there again, and make sure that all these needs are being met for that family.
Yeah. Questions, I want to say again, for people who are listening, you got questions, you got comments, you want to participate in the conversation, you can certainly do that by calling us, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. It's Focus. We're on this morning, WILL AM, but we're also webcasting the program through our website, which is will.illinois.edu. I'd like to have you, Reverend Williams, talk a little bit more about what it is that you do at Restoration Urban Ministries, because you have a certain philosophy that is goes beyond. You do provide people with emergency assistance. Obviously, you're trying to help people who are in a particular kind of crisis, but that you're trying to help people get past crisis to the point where they can take care of themselves.
Yes. Let me say this philosophically first, is that I'm the oldest of 18 brothers and sisters. I know what poverty is. I've grown up with it. We were made fun of. We went to school. There's a lot of things that we didn't have because of where we come from. At one point, my mom was on welfare. I watched later on as one of my sisters was on welfare. I watched them and I watched some of my younger brothers and sisters and watched the trap that they were in. They received just enough to be able to eat, maybe provide a place to live, and no goals and nothing beyond that. And it's almost like a narcotic, is that I've seen generation after generation after generation continually doing the same thing and no change. Mom was on welfare. Daughter's on welfare, has got children. That daughter grows up and she's on welfare with children. Here's this guy, hasn't really learned how to be a father. And so now he's got several children. He's doing exactly the same thing that his dad did and the dad before there. And generation after generation after generation, the same situation. It's quite obvious. I'm an African-American. And I'm 60 years old, 61 years old. I've spent my entire life the victim of sometimes government programs who were there to help me. The intentions was, we're going to help you. And a lot of times what they did was they gave me another form of welfare. And it came to the place where I realized this is a trap. You know, I don't want anyone again to come up to me and say, here's some money so that you're able to do this. Okay, help me with my emergency, help me with my immediate needs, but then give me some tools so that eventually I can get out of this. I don't want to live here forever. I would like some of the nicer things in life that I see other people enjoy. We talk about the American dream. If I'm on welfare, there is no American dream. And now I'm trapped. I have no skills. I have no work history. I have nothing. And I'm living this out every day. I can go back home. I can see the same thing still playing out in the community that I grew up in. The same thing going on. They come to restoration. And one of the concerns that I've got is that if you have any kind of abilities at all, and in fact, you're capable of doing something, what we need to do is find out what that is. We need to work with you so that you feel good about yourself. And so that this idea of being able to achieve once again is there. I feel bad that we've sort of lost this American dream, that it's not there anymore, and that we settled for less, and we don't give our best, we don't try very hard any longer, and we want someone to give us something instead of teaching me how I can help myself. And that means also making me accountable, because there are some times when I've just made a bad decision, and I need someone to say to me, that's a bad decision, and just be real honest and frank with me so that now I can deal with that. Yeah. We help individuals. We do case management. They go to classes for 4 hours every day. We're a religious organization. I believe personally that you have to make the spirit healthy as well. So we address those areas, and we address physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, because we want them leaving. And when they leave, that they feel good about who they are. They know why they're here. And now they believe that I've been equipped with whatever it takes for me to get out there and make it. You know, and that's pretty much philosophically what we do. We want to teach them, you know, we assume because someone is, because they've moved from place to place and there's a lot of this going on, is that they know how to be a neighbor. I mean, someone moved next door to me, I assume they know how to be a neighbor. I assume they respect the property and respect me and you know, that I don't have to deal with the loud music or the kids playing in the yard or digging up the yard and all those things. But that's not, if you're transitioning, if you're constantly moving, migrating from one place to the next, where do you pick up those skills? Where do you really learn how to be a neighbor, and even placing them in a home? And I've never had a home before, you know, and I tear the house up and everybody's frowning on me. No one ever told me how to take care of anything. And so we believe that we start at square one. Let's get honest. Let's get them a chance to see where they come from and what can they do about it. Because I believe change, anyone can change. Mm.
Our guest in this part of the show, the Reverend Irvin Williams, he's Executive Director of Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign. Also here with us is Beverly Baker. She's Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County. We're talking about homelessness in our area, our part of the state. We'll talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, in recognition of Poetry Month, we hear from poet Marie Howe. She's not very well known. The first poem of hers that caught our attention, What the Living Do, is about her new comprehension of life after her brother's death. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Brunch is also served on Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30. Information on menus and wine and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Good to have you with us. We're here on WILL AM. We're also webcasting through our website. That's will.illinois.edu. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics. We'll have some more talk about homelessness on the program Monday in the 11 o'clock hour, trying to get it at it from a little bit more of a national perspective and from a human rights perspective and what we're doing, perhaps what we're doing wrong, how we're trying to fix it. Our guest will be Tanya Tull. She's president and CEO of Partnering for Change. Also on Monday, we'll have a regular monthly show on home maintenance. And then on Tuesday, I want to mention that Celeste Quinn will be talking with Jim Barrett. He's professor of history at the University of Illinois, and we'll be talking about something about the experiences of Irish people in America. He's written a new book that's The Irish Way, Becoming American in the Multi-Ethnic City. So they'll be talking about that next Tuesday in the 11 o'clock hour. And you can check the schedule, find out what we will do by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. That way you can listen to past programs and also check out the schedule, listen to past programs. We're on Twitter, by the way, Will Public Media. You can also check us out on Facebook. In this hour of Focus, we're talking about homelessness in our part of the state in East Central Illinois. We have two guests, Beverly Baker. She's Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County, and Reverend Irvin Williams. He's Executive Director and Pastor of Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign. We do have a caller. We'd certainly welcome others. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we have an email if you'd like to share your thoughts that way, will-talk@illinois.edu. Here's a caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
I wanted to identify myself as basically a supporter, contributor to the urban ministries and other causes within the community to support people. Reverend, you had quite a riff going a few minutes ago about the disabling qualities of government, and I had to leave the car for a few moments, so maybe I missed the point. I'm a believer in Lincoln's definition of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. As inadequate as government programs are to provide motivation, spiritual depth, and so on, it's about as the best so far that this people has been able to bring themselves together to join together and form. And I really don't think you want the government as such inculcating spiritual values, do you? Or being the arbiter of all kinds of personal moral choices?
You're correct.
So it's a good thing you folks have programs going, and I'm a personal believer in self-help self-help types of philosophy, and I've benefited from it. But quite frankly, you sound a little... I don't like the offhand way with which you dismiss the kind of cold charity that keeps people from the uttermost depths of human neglect and deprivation. It's not adequate, but It's the best we've been able to do as a government and as a people. And I hope for the better. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the comment. What do you think about very clearly what you're doing is putting a lot of emphasis on individual and people doing for themselves. What do you see some role for government and government programs, though?
I definitely believe in them. But I try to be real careful because, again, the whole purpose is not to become dependent upon government or any other, but as a community, as a family. That's my understanding. That's what a community should be, a common unity, you know, that there should be this desire that all of us get in here. We work to take care of our own. We help by providing. What should government do? I think government should lead. I think they should be there to encourage volunteerism, encourage a lot of things, and sometimes subsidize to help get things going, but be able to back out so that it has a face to it. I would much rather know Mrs. Smith or Mr. Jones than I would U.S. government. I would much want to, that's the one that I'm going to have the relationship with. That's the one that I really want to get involved with. Government should be there to help strengthen, undergird, and then at some point begin to move away because it's the responsibility of the community to take care of our own. Maybe it's a definition of neighbor that we should do that. When we were growing up, we grew up in neighborhoods. And it seems as though everyone in that area, in the block, in the area where we lived in, they participated. That, again, being poor, there was times when we saw a lot of times pots of beans and soup and cornbread and things going up and down the street because families were helping each other get through the hard times we were going through. Those are some of the things that are still critical. If it isn't there, then government, give me some ideas, because the idea is that I cannot live my life dependent upon government to do it. So at some point, whatever they do, it should be done in such a way. And I felt like that's what we did with the TANF program. We moved from basically just free money, welfare, to now where there were some qualifications, there are some things that a family need to do. They need to be educated. They need to learn skills. They need to be looking for a job. Yeah, that's good. That's not bad. That's what we want to encourage that mom to do. Don't just sit there and let everyone else take care of you. So you got gifts. You got talents. You got insight. And as a nation, as a people, we need to know what she knows. She has special insight that we don't. Well, if she's being pacified because she simply sits at home, wait for the mailman to drop the check off, we never really get to know her. She's just a statistic.
Yeah. The problem here is, now we've weighed into what's been a huge controversy here in this country for I don't know how many decades, about if there's persistent poverty and if there are people who are persistently disadvantaged, well, what's going on? And we seem to bounce back and forth between two poles. On the one hand, of people trying to argue that the problem is the people themselves, or that it's something that's beyond their control, that it has to do with racism, with economics, with bad schools, with discrimination in housing, with all of those things added together. And it seems that the big argument it comes down to, well, what's the role of the personal here? And that's why I think when people hear you talk that maybe they're going to get upset, because you're saying, well, you're wanting to pay attention to the role of the personal.
Yes, yes, yes. I think we've got a lot of gifted people living in our community who could come alongside, if I guess the term is partner, who is there to help teach and train and show me how to help myself. We're not an organization that's there to help poor people. We're poor people learning how to help ourselves. We're asking others to come alongside us and teach us, give us the skills and things, and then get us in a situation where we can now begin to take care of ourselves. I've got to teach my younger child something. And I don't want to teach my younger child is, don't worry about it, son, the government's going to take care of you. No, I want them to find out who they are, look and see, and hone those skills, gifts, talents that they have, and get out there and give it everything you got. If you fall flat on your face, I would like to think government is going to come alongside, help get me up again, you know, stabilize me, and then say, go for it again, kid. You know, that's what I think they should do instead of just constantly, and sometimes what we had done in the past, and I think we're getting better at it, is just thinking that the answer is how much money we can give. We need more than that. We need individuals. We need flesh and blood coming alongside of us and willing to spend some time and get to know us and work with us.
How important to the work that you do, do you think, is the fact that you're a faith-based organization? Could you be doing what you do if you didn't have that component, do you think?
I think we got people down at Restoration who's very comfortable with that. I don't think I could. I think what motivates me to do what I do is because of my faith. I think that's the primary reason. You take that out of the picture and suddenly I become something that I'm not, something that I really don't want to be. I am grateful for the compassion that I feel in my heart and grateful that someone came alongside me, helped me, and saw something in me that was worth spending time. And I'm motivated to do that same thing because of my faith.
I think it could be a whole other topic for another show about, you know, reformulating our government and the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think we can all say we don't want government doing everything for us, and government can't do everything for us. And that's why we're fortunate to have, you know, our local communities. And I think that in this community in particular, through my role with United Way, I've seen it time and time and time again, the kindness and compassion of the people who live here. And they step up when they know there's a need. They step up. They give of their time. They volunteer. They give of their talents. They offer their knowledge and their expertise in whatever ways that they can. And they do. They give of their money when they have it to help others in whatever way they possibly can. And change doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen easily. But we see people, you know, trying to support our schools, trying to support our children, all towards a better future. So I think that, you know, when that government can't do everything for us. And that's, as a local community, we have to look at what the needs are, because every single community across America is different. No two are exactly alike. We have to look internally and see what do we need and how do we solve that problem here. And that's with this topic that we started earlier about the emergency shelter for families. It's time to address that issue, and we have people stepping up to the table to look at it seriously and figure out how we can get it done. And I'm confident it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, we did, as you say, we started out talking about homelessness. And though I think that there's still an important question here about what are the limits to what people can actually do. I mean, what are the limits to charity? That if you're asking people, if you have some real significant need and you're saying community, you step up and people will and they'll reach into their pockets. But I wonder sometimes, well, is that really enough? And should we be responding in a different sort? In addition, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing that, but in addition to that, should we expect some kind of response from government? And then the question is, okay, well, what should that response be?
Right. You know, I think I don't think we can keep asking people to throw money at it. I think there has to be more to it, and that's programs that receive funding, whether it be, you know, federal dollars, state dollars, or dollars raised locally here in our community, have to be accountable for the work that they do. And outcomes are very important, and that's something that organizations that receive funding from United Way are held accountable to, just using us as one example because it's the one I'm most familiar with. That's important to then to be able to say that, you know, money was put towards this, and look what happened. Look at the great things that happened as a result of focusing some dollars on this issue. So I do think people need to be held accountable, and that, you know, again, a community coming together and giving of their time and their talents is equally as important as giving money.
Mm. We have about maybe 5-6 minutes left. I have another caller here. Let me, again, for the benefit of anybody who might have just tuned in, introduce the guests. Beverly Baker is Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County. Reverend Irvin Williams is Executive Director and Pastor of Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign. And we have a caller here in Urbana, so we'll talk to them on our line number one. Hello.
Yes, I'm calling in regard to the earlier gentleman who called in, and he had missed part of the show and wanted to call in to say that your guest should be appreciative of what's been handed to him or whatever his approach was. That was not at all what your guest said. And the pastor is very dignified, obviously, and forgiving because I don't understand why nobody called that guy on that. When he says, you people, what does he mean by that? You people means a designated disenfranchised people, of which I'm not. I continue to ask this. I called another time. Why aren't people calling in and saying, how can I help, or here's another resource, instead of calling and criticizing the very people who need help? The pastor described a beautiful story about his coming up and him raising himself up by the bootstraps out of poverty. That is to be celebrated, and that is his goal for everybody around him in his ministry. And I just don't understand that this community would let that gentleman who called earlier get away with saying something that was so short-sighted, really bigoted in a way, such as you people, and you should be happy for what you get.
I'm not sure that that's what I heard in what the caller had to say. I don't know if the Reverend Williams took it that way. I mean, we can ask him. What was it that you thought?
Well, my point is people call in and ask what you can do. Don't criticize. This is a problem in the community. And rather than call in and judge and be judgmental and criticize the very people who need help, and as well a gentleman who himself succeeded despite the odds against him, celebrate that.
All right. Well,
where is everybody? How do the listeners let somebody like that get away with that in this community with saying that?
Well, the phone lines are always open, so people are always free to call in and react to anything that they've heard on the air.
Where are you people out there, the ones who know better than this? Call the guy on it.
All right.
Don't let him get away with that kind of language.
Well, first of all, let me thank you for the comment, and let me then say to the guests, and maybe it would be a good thing for us to talk about, if people are interested in contributing to an organization that works on homelessness or any other kind of community need, you know, how do people find out about if they want to give their time, if they want to make a contribution, you know, whatever it is, how do people find out about who's doing this work and then how they might get involved?
Well, I'm happy to make myself a point person. Beverly Baker at United Way of Champaign County, you can call me and I'd be happy to tell you all about what's going on in the community and find out what your interest is and where your passions lie and get you connected. People that want to volunteer can go to cuvolunteer.org, which is a great option that we have here to look for volunteer opportunities. Organizations like Restoration Urban Ministry and many others can go on and put their specific volunteer needs posted on that website, and you can go and peruse through those and find something that works with your time and your schedule and your interest area, because there are an awful lot of people doing an awful lot of work in our community. Something that my colleagues and I say every day is there are an awful lot of people doing an awful lot of good things out there, and we're fortunate to live in the country we live in, and I think that's something both callers were getting to, and we're fortunate to live in the community that we live in because people do step up and they do care. And we do, you know, it takes time to address changes and address problems, but eventually we get there.
Yeah. Well, I would direct people to our website. It's called Will Connect, and it has information there on both this particular issue, on some of the things that we've been talking about lately on having to do with affordable housing. We did some programming last year in the fall having to do with people needing help feeding their families. So that's also, and we do, I think, have some resources on that page as well. So it's willconnect.org. And also you might look at the website of our friends, CU Citizen Access. We've partnered with them in doing some reporting. And I think they do a lot of really good work looking at what's going on in our communities. What kind of needs are there? And who are the people that are responding? So there are places that you, if you're interested in getting involved, there are certain places that you can go. I don't know if there's anything more that you wanted to add to what you had said or any way that you want to react to the callers.
Well, I guess the only thing I would like to say is that I'm really amazed and I'm quite, I feel really good about Champaign-Urbana, this metroplex here, and about the way our volunteers show up and the fact that we don't receive government funds, and yet we've been open for 19 and a half years. We've had literally thousands of people that's come through that. And that money and the resources and everything that it's taken, voluntary help, everything it's taken in order for us to continue to exist, it had to come from this community.
So all private donations,
yes.
Fund,
yes.
Restoration?
Yes. That's right. And so I appreciate that. And in fact, that's exactly what we believe. We believe community efficiency. And I think we're getting better and better at it all the time.
So you're optimistic about in the long run about making progress on the kind of problems that we have talked about?
Oh, I love this stuff. I love this challenge because I think that we're going to, I guess to coin a phrase we say a lot, I'm going to man up. I think our community is going to man up. I think we're going to take this thing on. We're going to do what we need to do. And we're going to go back to some basic things in our Constitution that all men are entitled to. And we're going to see and whatever we got to do to make that happen. I believe we're going to do it.
Yeah. Well, we're just about at the end of the time. Any last thing that you might like to, last thought you might like to leave with folks?
Again, I think I've already said it, is that, it, you know, this is a great community. And when we see a need, people step up time and time again. And I have every confidence that this particular issue that we were talking about today is being looked at seriously and it will get addressed. And if people are interested in getting involved or learning more about it, they can contact us and we'll make sure that they get connected to the latest information. So
okay.
Thank
so,
you.
And so, you know, do you have a website people can go to? Maybe that's
we
for
do.
Some
we have,
people that's the easiest thing to do.
That's right. It's uwayhelps.org. That's our website, and we have a variety of different resources and links and information on there. So that would be a great place for people to start.
Okay. And I know that you, last time I think I checked your website, though, it seemed like it was you were constructing a new website.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
But it's at some point people would be able to go on the web and find out more about Restoration Urban Ministries.
It's up and going. www.restorationurbanministries.net. And it also has a number of links there that can take them to a lot more than what we had previously.
All right. Well, there, for right now, we'll have to leave it with our thanks to our guests, Reverend Irvin Williams. He's the Executive Director, Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
And also Beverly Baker. She's Director of Community Impact with United Way of Champaign County.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.